Hey, this is Vince Beese, a business leader and global revenue generator and the co-founder of the T-Rex Summit. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my great friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me today is Vince Beese. He is a global revenue generating machine, head of enterprise business at Customer, co-founder of the T-Rex Summit, which we'll talk about because I think it's fascinating. I love the name and then also what he does with it. And also, he's the host of the best-selling podcast, which is an amazing show. And not just saying that because he had me on as a guest, but because he does great stuff with that. Vince, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So let's talk about the T-Rex Summit. I want to hear in your words, what is that? Because the name doesn't describe it, but as soon as you do, I know people will get it.
Yeah, I came up with the concept about 3 or 4 years ago. I live in the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina. So we're surrounded by three really populous areas, which is Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. And I'm a big fan of networking. But in my networking, I didn't see any specific groups that were focused on just revenue generation at companies. So I initially created a meetup called the Revenue Exchange and quickly grew. So it's people that are in marketing, sales, client success, all working towards the same goal, which is growing revenues at that company. So the long and short of it is the Revenue Exchange turned into, for short, T-Rex. And then I partnered up with a gentleman named Eric Boggs, and we created this summit called the T-Rex Summit that we hold in person every year, except for 2020, because that wouldn't be the thing to do in 2020. But we did do a virtual event this year. But it's really nice because it's really about a community. It's a community of revenue producers in this particular area. And what we really get out of it is the level of collaboration and sharing that we do in this group and what's working, what's not working, what could I be trying, and the networking aspect. So yeah, we've been doing it for 3 years now and hope to get going live again in person next year.
Hopefully 2021, it will go live. I love that concept and I love the name. I mean, I think it's one of those things where I'm not totally jealous that you came up with that first, but I love that. The T-Rex, right? The Revenue Exchange.
It's a killer.
Yeah. So you're focused on global revenue. Like, how did you get started in that? What led you to that? I won't say niche, but that focus. Let's talk about that for a minute.
I guess most of my career, if not my entire career, there's been a couple of things that have been consistent. One is B2B sales. Two is SaaS. Actually, when it started, it called application service providers, then became SaaS. So that's how old I am. But it also focused on enterprises, going after large corporations. So it really didn't start over day. That's 21 years worth of going after that. Then over time, my responsibilities translated from national to more of a global perspective, which tends to be the case when you're going after large strategic accounts. Anyway, these bigger corporations typically have locations outside of the US that you need to support as well. So that's how it kind of started. And I enjoy the strategy around going after big partnerships like that. I'm not afraid of long sales cycles. I think you have to have the mindset going into it. So I think it's a bunch of different things that really led me to doing that and wanting to continue to do it, quite frankly.
Kind of in a different direction than I was wanting to go next, but let's talk about the relationship sales cycle length. How did you determine that you like that? Or was that something you evolved into? Or have you always been a long-term relational guy? And similar topic, discuss how you want, is also where do other people, like it's just not a good fit? Or what have you seen when people try to do it and they're just not built for that?
They can be built to be clear, I don't like that it takes so long.
you just have a high tolerance for it.
Right. I just know the mindset going into it. It's not going to happen in 30 days as much as I'd like it to happen. I always strive to shorten the cycle, of course. Again, it just goes with strategic sales. If you're in strategic sales there's a process that you have to follow, your process and mapping to their process. And that's what you have to do. And you can do things to hopefully shorten that process, but that's that. So I don't like the time frame. I live with it because that's what it takes to do those things. And you have to be a little bit more patient in a transactional sales cycle. So when I'm looking to hire for roles underneath in this fashion, I think you've got to find folks that have a similar mindset, or at least coming into it with that sales cycle you had of 15, 30, 60 days. That's not the situation here. So you got to be really careful about hiring. Just because somebody had a lot of success selling a SaaS solution, you really got to think about how complex are the deals they're selling? How much support do they get selling it? And are they really in the mindset to be able to, you might only have one deal a quarter or two deals a year, and you might lose one of those two. When you lose one of these deals, it's way more devastating to lose something that's one of 15 deals you're working at any given time, right? So it's part experience, it's part the mentality coming into it. And I personally like to hire people that at least had some level of complexity in the sales cycle for sure.
Do you do anything different in this role with the hiring process as far as the length of your selection process, like the hoops that you put people through and that? Have you adjusted that at all, or do you do what you've always done?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think you always have to consider new ways of interviewing, new techniques, quite frankly, especially as we hire younger and younger folks into the sales market. So I'm always looking for different and better ways of viewing and making sure you're making the right decisions. I will say I do like when you're getting down the cycle with a rep and hiring some level of a test, like a personality test or something along those lines, compared to the others on your team. So I'd like to test it first on my existing team to see if this testing module really works and then apply that to candidates coming in. I do believe that multiple people in the organization should have the chance to have the interview process and feedback on that, because it's important that your peers and colleagues are also interviewing these candidates. So a team type of thing. And I think as much as you can, you should try to mimic some of the things you'll have to do in the sales process if you can. It's hard to do, but you can do things like mock presentations and mock qualification calls and things like that. So those are the type of things. But at the end of the day, it comes down to this. You're going to be working and be spending probably more time, well, you used to be, spending more time with that person, possibly your family. So do you like that person? And can you work with that person? Can you collaborate with that person? Those things mean a lot to me. Can we work together?
And I love what you said about the hiring process, kind of what they go through, some of the hoops, some of the challenges, the tests, the meeting with other stakeholders in the organization. I know for me, from all the hiring I've done, one of the things I've focused on is to do my best in building a recruiting kind of a hiring process that is close to the actual sales cycle, to see who's got the patience for it, who's got the desire. Because if they're going to treat your hiring process the same way they're going to treat their pipeline, whether they realize it or not, right? And so if they're not doing the follow-ups, if they're getting impatient, if they don't understand why they have to meet with another person, when they get to your company in the seat specifically, and then they're having to do this global enterprise long sales cycle sale, they will be challenged, right? And so I think that's great that you kind of practice like you fight, right? That's what the military says.
You also, if you like a candidate, you're going to do a little selling, of course. I also want to see that candidate, see how they sell. How are they selling themselves? And I don't mind if they're pushing, right? Because to your point, that'll tell me what they're going to be like in a real sales cycle. Are they going to fight for what they want and make good points and drive the conversation? Or are they going to sit back and say, well, what's the next step? And, you know, when should we talk next? And if they're waiting for me to present to them all the next steps, I'm like, oh man, am I going to have to do all the work for this person if they join, right?
And the challenge with that is that person feels like because they're interviewing, they're in kind of a subservient type of role in the relationship because they're waiting for you to tell them what's happening and moving forward. Instead, you want that person who's always in that mode, which is like, if I see the opportunity, it's a good fit. I want to move this forward and be proactive, because that person will not default to being an order taker when they're working for you. They're going to default to their mode, right? Everyone defaults to whatever their speed is, which I think it's interesting because I heard stories of companies that actually tell people no, that they like, they want this person. It's a perfect fit. They literally reject them and tell them no to see who comes back swinging and fighting for the job because believe it or not, customers say no. And then who's going to actually go for it long term?
That's interesting. I never thought of telling a candidate I didn't think would make it through it to see what that person says. What if that backfires on you?
Well, then they didn't have it. And when you give them that pipeline and they have those clients, like they're going to just take no and be like, okay.
Really? What if that person then went to your competitor and is kicking your butt right now because you rejected them?
That's true. Or what if they go there and they're just taking orders there? Who knows? You never know, right?
I would track it.
There you go. So let's talk about your experience with yourself. And then internally, what are the best reps doing? Like, what are the successful traits of reps doing that you see internally?
Certainly, there's a lot of tangibles that you have to have. And I think we can put them to the side for now. I think everyone can agree on some of those tangibles. But I think the one thing that the truly best sellers do is they develop a relation such that they're involved in the collaboration early in the process, meaning they're working hand in hand with the customer on what does the SOW look like? What do the business terms look like? What does your launch plan look like? Let's work together on that. What's the best way we can get agreement internally on moving forward? It's those people that can not be someone from the outside viewed as only the salesperson, but the person that can be viewed as the trusted resource, the person that they trust to share intimate things. I'll give you an example. Myself and one of my reps had what was supposed to be a 15-minute call, which turned into an hour call. We had an email that came through that was a little concerning. Instead of replying to the email, guess what we did? Oh my God, we picked up the phone.
No.
And we had a conversation and we got to the root of why they asked that question. And matter of fact, good thing we did because it was a misunderstanding. So we put that to rest and then we went on to, hey, now let's go back and talk about the process and when we're going to do this and when are we going to launch. Like we got into the really important things in collaboration and we helped this person along of here's what I would do from a best practices standpoint based on what your launch time is and here's how we need to work backwards. And he started taking notes and did this. And what can you guys share with me? Well, we have an ROI calculator. Would you like that? So we started collaborating on how this person can help make an argument for us moving forward in a relationship because he now trusts us. He sees us as first two other vendors. He calls the others vendors and he calls us, I'll be honest with you, wink, wink. I shouldn't be saying this, but you guys got a leg up on folks because of this time we're taking to establish this relationship and trust. So collaboration, long-winded, sorry.
I love that. The collaboration is important. Fits in what I've told people forever is no matter what you're selling, could be direct to consumer, one call close, could be long sales cycle, always make it we. It's you and I versus the world, right? It's you and I versus the problem. It's you and I versus whatever. Like we're in this together, arm in arm. And the earlier you can do that and the more often you can do that, then it's a team event instead of the classic, which is I'm trying to get you to do something so that I can win. Yeah. And whatever happens to you is great, but like that's not the goal.
Sales is really easy if in the initial part of the process, you discover what their real pain is and you both agree that we together can solve this pain. If you can't solve that pain, you both agree, you both move on. Yep. But if you agree that there's a chance that we could work together and solve this problem, you've got an opportunity. It's that simple. The timing might be off longer. That's fine. In my world, if it's off by 12 months, I make a note of that and we follow back up in 6 months. But if you don't discover what the pain is initially, and you don't both agree that you can solve that problem together, then there's no sense of having any more conversations.
Yeah.
You're not going to change anything.
And if you don't uncover that, a lot of people, they check the boxes in the discovery part. You can call it whatever you want, discovery, probing, but they're scratching the surface. They're not getting deep. And then they're not making it a team event. Instead, just assuming everyone's going to want it, right? One size fits all.
Yeah. Or I'm such a great salesperson, I'm going to convince them that they have a pain and I'm going to solve this imaginary pain. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're creating a new market or a new solution, you're the one that has to explain to them you have this pain that's not seen, but here's what your pain is. So don't get me wrong. You can help uncover a pain. But if you're selling a mature solution, like I am at a customer, we're rip and replace, right? So if there's no pain with their current provider, at least they're not sharing with me that there's any pain, then can I convince them that there is pain? Maybe, but maybe I'm wasting my time, right? Maybe I'm wasting their time.
And if we correlate that for people who struggle to understand that and how simple this is, imagine a doctor talking to someone who doesn't feel like they have a problem, doesn't think they have a problem, doesn't agree that they have a problem, and then trying to convince them they have a problem and that they need surgery or they need medication. It's like, no, there has to be some diagnosis and then some willingness to actually want to get it taken care of.
That's true. That's a good one. I didn't think of the medical analogy. Imagine going for your annual physical and everything's fine, but you're a certain age. So the doctor says, have you thought about doing a hip replacement? But why, doc? My hips don't bother you. Yeah, but you're of a certain age. And I found that people at a certain age tend to have to change your hips at certain points. So you should think about doing that. So then you start thinking, I'm like, wow, should I get my hip change? Is that a real thing?
That's Maybe to I me. But, I didn't know I had a problem with my hip, but if he said I did, then I must.
But that's the image that people have of salespeople out there. That's bad sales. That's creating a problem that doesn't exist. And that's using fear to do that unjustly, right?
And I had never thought about going that far with the hip analogy. So I love that because, again, that's what salespeople do a lot of times is they say, well, you must have this problem and you must want to solve it because everybody wants to solve this problem. And they've drank their own Kool-Aid where they think just everybody versus consultative solution focused. What are you seeing on your clients in their businesses? What are they doing well these days? What are their teams doing? What are you seeing successful outside of your own realm?
So you mean the folks that we're selling to, what are they doing well?
Yeah.
Well, again, with the lens of CRM, so we provide a modern day CRM platform for customer service. So some of the things and trends we're seeing in our market and our industry is providing your customers with the ability to self-help. So most sites today will have some rinky-dink FAQ section. They'll have some Q&A section, something like that. Some might have deployed a really crappy chat bot, right, for self-help. But everybody agrees that today, consumers, especially younger consumers, they want self-help first. When they go to your website first thing they want to do, can I find the answers myself? Like, where is my order? Or I want to cancel my order, or I want to change this, right? They want to be able to do that themselves. They certainly don't want to pick up the phone. So to me, what we're trying to do is use self-help and automation to help solve that, to make a better customer experience. Because if you make a better customer experience, it's going to take the workload off of the actual agents that have to field emails and forms and phone calls and live chats. And 67% of consumers have self-stated that they prefer first self-help over live support. So that's a big trend we're seeing. And the ones that are doing well are addressing that right now.
And I would say, even from myself, which is not in the younger generation, I'm that same way as well. I mean, I'd rather just easily, quickly find the solution, chat with somebody, do that while I'm multitasking versus picking up the phone. So I think it's really about meeting people where they are. Where do you see that fitting into sales in this day and age? Obviously not with what you sell because it's long sales cycle. It's very focused on providing that bigger solution. Do you see any of that creeping into sales where people are doing more of that and being sold by a chatbot?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think what's the stats we see today? That 60 to 80% of the buyer's decision has been made before they even start a conversation. I think that started years and years ago, right?
Yeah.
I think we've all become wiser that your marketing and your message needs to be crisper and clearer. And you need the, like, for example, pricing has been a big discussion. Should I put pricing on my website or shouldn't? And we can argue both cases. I think that if you sell a product that is easy to explain pricing, you should disclose it. If you have a solution that's more customized, for instance, then how can you show your pricing? So that's one example of that. Educating the buyer prior to having conversations, I think that's only a good thing for your company and your salespeople, quite frankly.
I agree. I like how you put that, especially with the pricing, because that comes up a lot with my clients and people I talk with, where they don't want to put the pricing, or they do, should they? And you're right. I mean, in the biggest trend that I see is that the buying public is rarely going into a sales conversation with a salesperson, phone, face-to-face, whatever that might be, completely uninformed with no idea about the company, the product, the service, maybe even the salesperson. I rarely ever get on a phone call with somebody who's trying to sell me something without knowing a ton about that person, because I've Googled them, right? And so, yeah, I think, you know, just be more transparent, serve people up the info they want prior, and make it easy for them to continue the conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, look, let's be realist. If you've got a good story to tell, that should help you. So case studies and customer testimonials and all that stuff, that's going to help you. And it's not you selling, it's your customer selling for you, right? So I think you should be upfront and open about that stuff and provide them the answers. We also have an FAQ section, but it's more robust. Obviously, we use our own tools. So you can figure out answers of how our service works and so on and so forth, right? We want you to know full transparency what you're getting into if you start this conversation.
Now, let's shift a little bit. What does it mean to you to be authentic?
Well, like you, I 100% agree that you need to be authentic to be a salesperson. I think those days of snake oil salesmen are long gone, or the analogy of a car salesman. I think that's long gone. And some of that's maybe not being authentic. Some is just being deceiving. But I have this saying, it's real, right? You have to be empathetic, authentic, likable, and realistic, right? So I haven't seen a good salesperson, I don't know if you have, that hasn't been their authentic self. You can't fake yourself in sales. There's no way. I mean, you can for a short period of time, but how can you do that over time? It's just impossible. So the one thing I will say about being authentic, you also have to be self-aware, right? Because maybe you're being authentic, but you have a bunch of weaknesses that you need to address, because your authentic is kind of yourself is turning some people off when you do these things. So you have to be authentic and self-aware at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love it. So what was the reel again?
Yeah, sorry. I was stumbling over my own reel. It was relatable, empathetic, relatable, authentic, and likable, right? And I think, you know, relatable is an important one, right? Because I don't know about you, but I always try to start off a new conversation not talking about business at all. How are you doing? How's the weather? Can you believe that? Did you see the debate? Whatever it is, just a human-to-human conversation. Like, that's the way you should start off conversation. That's my belief, right? And that's how I'm going to start to be relatable, right, to people, is that, oh boy, I can even have a normal conversation with this person. If you can't start the conversation off that way, maybe you can end the conversation that way. Because I'm going back to trying to create this trust factor as well and trying to find things we have in common, right?
Yeah.
Because believe it or not, I still think people buy from people they like, right?
That's it. I mean, that's what Bob Berg has in his book, Go Giver, right? All things being equal, they'll buy from people they know, like, and trust. And you have to do the know. Obviously, they get to know you, and then they have to like you, right? Most of the time, people want to buy from somebody they like. They could trust somebody and not like them.
True.
I mean, think about going back to the medical example. I mean, you could have a doctor that you don't really like, but you trust because they're amazing and they're the foremost expert on hip replacement surgeries. And so you don't like them. Their bedside manner is terrible. We've met those doctors, but they're amazing and they're an expert. So you deal with it and you tolerate it, but you're definitely not excited about the experience because the like part was missing. The rapport part was missing, that bedside manner. So I think that's fascinating when you put it that way. Where do you see persuasion fitting in for your success, and how do you see that being used?
Yeah, I believe that. And I think there's three key steps in sales, and I think it hasn't changed in a billion years, which is qualification, convince, and close. You got to qualify, convince, and close. Convince, persuasion, same thing. Like, you have to earn the right to start to persuade. Right? You can't just start the conversation and try to persuade me because, like, whoa, 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 what are you doing?
Right.
You know what I mean? Let's not jump the gun here. So you have to earn the right to get to be able to start the persuasion and convincing. And when you're in that mode, there's things you need to be doing to help your cause. And I think in my world, or at least what I'm selling, consultative sales, strategic sales, you really got to build your case of expertise and how you can help them back to solve that problem. So how have you done it before? Have you worked with clients that look like us before when they've had these problems? What have you done from a technology standpoint, but also from a human standpoint? What have you done? See, that's what they want to hear. They don't want to hear that your technology, oh my God, it's incredible. It has all these features and bells and whistles. Like, okay, but yeah, how does that at the end of the day solve my pain, my problem, right? So that's how I go about convincing, is by using examples and use cases, whatever I have at my disposal, to convince why we're the best solution to solve that problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where everybody just understands that everybody else thinks their kid is the cutest and the most perfect one, right? Especially as a baby. It's like everyone says that, right? Like, you don't need to convince me that you think your kid is the best, because that's what they all do. Like, they don't want that part of the sales presentation. They want what's in it for me, right?
Yeah. And they should, you know, so that's why I've always tried, where in businesses I've been at, there should always be some sort of ROI to why we're moving forward. So solving that pain, and here's the outcomes, right? So I've always tried to create some sort of simple calculation that we show, if we do these things, here's what you can expect. And it also kind of backs up what you're really preaching. Like, if we do these things and you look like other customers, we do similar things to them, here's kind of the low end of the results we can see, and more of a mid and a high range. And I think that gives them an idea of not just in theory what it could do, but from a dollars and cents, either it's a cost savings or it's making more money. It's those two things. It's either you're making more money or saving money, right? So that's what it really comes down to at the end of the day, doesn't it?
That's it. And showing them the tangible evidence from somebody else in a similar situation that agreed to buy and did it and lived and succeeded, right? Because at some level in our primal brains, our brains just want to stay safe in our cave, in our comfort zone, and change equals death. And so did somebody else survive? Did they live? Is it okay? Did they thrive? Okay, maybe it's safe. Maybe I'll try it.
Your point is that old adage that you don't get fired from choosing IBM. Now we're dating ourselves, but in my industry now, people could say you don't get fired from choosing Salesforce because they've become this new IBM. So I've always worked for early stage startups. I prefer that. I prefer nimble and innovative type companies. So I'm always battling some sort of Goliath, and I love being the David to Goliath, right? And you have to take a different tact when you're doing it. So your point of like, it's safe. Like I'm constantly trying to build our credibility and why we're a better decision than going after that big guy that's been around for 20 years and battling that. And that goes back to the early part of that, like in sales, in the qualification stage, and certainly moving into the convincing persuasion stage, you got to bring it to their forefront that you're not ignoring the fact that you're a tenth of the size of another company, but you have to use that to your advantage. And if you don't think you can use it to your advantage, then boy, you've got a real uphill battle, don't you? But that also tells me you need to know when to walk away, because if I'm up against somebody and they're really set on that other big, big solution, it's just not the right timing. I'm cool.
No.
We'll talk again in another 12 months or so.
And what's interesting too, and this is where a lot of sellers struggle with, is that even if you do get that deal and you persuade and can convince and get somebody to agree to you where they were thinking about the Goliath, they were thinking about the established solution, they do it because they like you and they agree, but you can tell they still are wondering what if. They will be a terrible client because they'll always be wondering what if. They'll always be wondering, like, what if I had gone that way and things will not be successful long term if you convince them, but they weren't totally on board.
Well, and this is the thing with SaaS. I mean, in a year, 24 months, 36 months, they could leave and go somewhere else. And
they could.
So you have to prove yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you have a limited time. Totally shifting gears. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. Let me take us back. I wanted to play linebacker for the New York Football Giants, but being my size and everything, I knew the chances of that happening just wasn't going to happen. So then I said, what's the next best thing? Oh, it'd be fun just to talk about sports. So
yeah,
that's what I wanted to do.
And what happened?
Well, I did go to University of Maryland and did a major in communications, and I did have limited success. My claim to fame when I was at University of Maryland, I was actually an intern for James Brown, the sports broadcaster on CBS for a year. So I had that. And then when I graduated, I actually was a Metro traffic reporter. You know, the people that do the traffic reports for a short period.
Yeah.
And I was also a radio DJ for a short period of time. So I had limited success. And then to me, it finally became apparent that, man, this is a hard business to really sustain success and to make a lot of money. Naturally, I kind of just fell into sales like I think most people do, quite frankly.
Yep. I love it. I love that journey. That's so awesome. What is your personal definition of success?
To me, being successful is just being satisfied with what you're doing. Like it gives you joy to do what you're doing. Because no matter how much you're making, if you're not happy, you don't even care. I've been in sales roles or management roles in the past where I was making a good amount of money, but I was like, I'm bored or I don't like this yet. So it's being whatever gives you joy. I also like to be challenged. So to me, success looks like constantly being challenged of what's the next thing. As you can see from my bio, I do lots of different things. I can juggle a bunch of things and still be effective. So to me, that's also being successful. I feel like I'm more successful when I'm able to do different things as opposed to just one thing at one time and that's it.
Yeah, I love it. And then final question, the journey or the destination?
I would have to say the journey, honestly.
Okay.
What do most people say? I'm curious.
You know, some people say the journey, some people say the destination, some people say both. I feel like some people say the journey because that's what you're supposed to say if you're enlightened and it's the right answer. I think there's a blend. I think there's people who believe in the journey and there's people who know like, okay, I've got to say journey. So yeah.
I think it's the journey because it's like you're going on a family vacation, right? You're all like, it's 2 weeks away and you're counting it down, right? Even as a kid, you remember that, right? Like it happens and then you're either in a car ride or an airplane or whatever it is and you enjoy it and you can't wait to. But sometimes the destination when you get there can be disappointing. I remember as a kid, like going to a specific park and I had in my head what it was going to be about. Then we get there, I'm like, really? Is this what we waited a year ago? I think you have to enjoy the journey because that's the part where you really can control and have fun with, right?
Well, and the part that you're experiencing and it's true and it's real in your analogy and your definition, which I appreciate because yeah, sometimes the destination is very disappointing, right? Whether it's a relationship with somebody that you've been moving towards and then you get it and you're like, or a job or a position or a house or money or a vacation spot. Yeah. And you're just like, the brochure looks really great and the journey seems fun and the buildup seems fun. And then you get it and you're like, oh yeah,
that's not. You get to the cabin and it has an outhouse. You know, you're like,
yeah, exactly, right? It's not quite what you built it up. Sometimes it's your own fault, but yeah, that's awesome. So you've got the salesatscale.com, which is the company website, right? And this is for the T-Rex for anyone that's interested. It's therevenueexchange.com.
So I can make it easier. Just go to T-RexSummit.com.
T-Rex Summit, which I love. Obviously, that's for the Southeast, but it's virtual now. And of course, I'm sure you'll take anybody who's willing to travel to the Southeast.
That's right. When it's a beautiful place to come. Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw that, I thought, you know what? That would be super fun because I've never spent time in that area. I think that'd be good. Obviously, you're pretty active on LinkedIn. Anywhere else people can find the various...
Well, I'm currently the head of enterprise at Customer with a K. That's the other thing. Yeah, but LinkedIn is the best place for folks to find me. And the great thing about my name is nobody else has my name. So it's really easy to find Vince Beese on LinkedIn, right? B-E-E-S-E. There might not ever be another Vincent Beese out there. I don't think so.
That's perfect. That makes that so easy. Vince, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show. I had a lot of fun and I appreciate you taking the time to share your info and my kind of wacky question. So thanks for that.
I appreciate coming on, Manav. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.